Thanks for tuning in today. I'm Dr. Nick, the Incrementalist. Join me as I seek out the small incremental changes being applied in other industries that we can learn from and that can be applied in healthcare. Can these changes bring immediate value, but also add up to the big improvements and revolution we need in healthcare? Come along with me to explore the possibilities. My innovative guests from around the globe have used small incremental improvements to achieve their moonshot. And today, I'm delighted to be joined by Paul Coyne. He is the co-founder and president of Inspiron, and Mike Wang, who is the CEO and founder of Inspiron. Gentlemen, thanks for joining me today.
Dr. Nick, thank you so much for having us.
Thank you.
So for the purposes of the listeners, I think it would be good to just get a little bit of background from you on both your journey to this point, as well as your journey to the technology and what it is that Inspiron is and does.
Okay, great. So I'll go first. My background was originally in the military, and then I transitioned to getting my MBA at Columbia, and also I pursued my nursing degree at Columbia as well, where I met Paul after graduation. Both of us ended up working at a major hospital in New York City. And we started to brainstorm about the idea of bringing a technology to the patients that will allow us to be able to truly open the pathway to AI ecosystem to the future. And that's essentially how we kicked off.
And just me, I started my career at Goldman Sachs and in derivatives. Actually suffered a stroke, so I spent a lot of time as a patient. And then recovered and went back to school to start a new career as a nurse. Was fortunate enough to meet Mike in nursing school, became great friends, and then started this together.
So you talk about this focus on the patient and, a little bit of background. Obviously, Paul, as a patient, I think one of the things that I always find about healthcare is that it's very personal. For those of us that are delivering healthcare, we're, looking at it from that perspective. But even if we deliver healthcare, we look at it from the patient perspective. Can you share a little bit about the history of that and what insights that gave you as part of the process?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, my mom, slept in the chair next to my hospital bed every night. She never missed a night. And, there's no greater feeling of vulnerability than to be a patient in the bed. And I was fortunate enough to have my mom there really every step of the way. But a lot of people, now as a provider, I see many people that just aren't as fortunate as I was to sort of have an advocate. And really, as the healthcare system becomes more and more complex, really there needs to be more focus on the patient. As it becomes more patient-centered, there's an obligation on the patient to sort of advocate for their own care and connect the complex system for themselves. And particularly for me, I was in a place mentally due to the stroke for a few years where I was unable to do that. And so I really am passionate about this technology because it really unites the care team and the patient in a way where, and the patient's family in a way that takes a complex system and a lot of complex technology and data and really simplifies it in a way that makes it easier for the patients to not feel as vulnerable. Our focus as a company and as a product is really to get the technology to enhance that fundamental truth that we're all humans. Inspiron actually means to inspire Ren, and Ren is the Chinese word for altruism, or the altruistic force that dwells within us. And so we really want to inspire that altruism and that connection to sort of alleviate that vulnerability and that feeling of helplessness that I felt as a patient and that any patient really feels when they're in that bed.
Yeah, so it's interesting you bring that up as a sort of technology solution, as it were, for what is in other countries certainly the family presence and the interaction of the family in many of the facilities is sort of a fundamental component. In some cases, it's a sort of necessity because of lack of resources, but, obviously that caring piece. And, certainly I've had the opportunity of hearing a little bit about the technology. Mike, maybe you can share a little bit about your journey and how you arrived at this. Obviously, the two of you met and, there was something that clicked. What was it that happened?
Yes. While I was pursuing my master's and my doctorate at Columbia, I actually worked as a clinical nurse on a cardiothoracic surgical unit. From my actual bedside practice, I started to notice a lot of gaps within our care that really is quite fractured and results in the staff not being able to care for patients in a cohesive and safe manner, despite the very, very best of efforts of my fellow nurses and managers. It just lacked the technology to allow us to be able to do that. And I felt very strongly about it. And thinking back, when I first approached Paul with the idea, he reflected that frustration from a data analytics perspective. So I was on the bedside and clinical perspective, and Paul came from kind of the background of data and on the analytics side. And we both agreed that one, those kinds of data currently does not exist, and two, more importantly, the impact of such data and what it can do to clinical outcome and also patient safety, as well as the effectiveness of staff to be able to practice in a more cohesive and team-oriented way. So when we had that original conversation, things really started to click, and we actually seeked out originally other technologies. We thought there must be something that exists out there already that does this. But to our surprise, technology out there were really fragmented, poorly designed, not well thought out, and just simply not clinically practical. So that's where we took the leap and said, you know what, I think the best way to do this is for us to actually make it from scratch, and let's make something that we would find impactful, effective, and practical as clinicians. So we went on our journey starting from that very point.
So if you think about your ultimate customer, and I want to get to the technology because it's really intriguing, and you know I've had an opportunity to sort of hear a little bit about that. But before we do, who would you consider as the primary target for this? Where is this focused on from a solution perspective? Is it the clinician? Is it the patients? Is it the institution? How do you sort of perceive that?
The customer is at the first stage of our development, the institution. So hospitals, long-term care facilities, nursing homes. And it's very interesting that you mentioned before that in many countries and cultures, it used to be a very family-oriented kind of a situation. But in recent years, that family tradition and that family structure has really become fragmented, and the care of the elderly, the care of those who are in need, are looked at in a very different way these days. So our primary our customers are the institutions. However, we have found there is also a private consumer application of this, where patients and patients' families could use a version of our technology to stay connected with the care of their loved ones. So I think ultimately it goes from the enterprise level all the way down to the consumer.
So as you think about the journey, you mentioned that there was nothing in place.
Yep.
With an expectation that, you know, gosh, you would think, given the need, that we would find something. As you marched along the sort of progression of developing this, insights that you developed as part of this that you thought were really significant, as you look back in time, you know, you're down the path, you look back, what were the significant inflection points in the development of this concept and solution?
Well, I think first we came from a very practical place. We didn't, from the very beginning, just say, let's build the coolest technology, let's build the most automated, the most fancy thing out there. Really came from a real place of clinical needs. And that was a very, very important starting point, because our ideas and our concepts were founded on solid grounds. And because of that, as we progressed and the technology capabilities far surpassed our original expectations. So not putting the technology and the capability before the practical needs of patients and clinicians, that was a very, very important starting point for us. And then once we were able to expand our team and really begin to dive deep into the technology aspects, all technological functionalities were fed from practical operational experiences and pain points. So the technologists that we work with are some of the best in the world who work with NASA, MIT, Columbia, and they know everything about the technology, but they really lacked that clinical perspective. And for one of the first times, we were really able to work side by side with the technologists to essentially feed them our clinical knowledge, our practical experience, in very intimate terms, so they understand our pain points. And I think those were some of the critical points of our journey that allowed us to get to where we are today.
So interesting you talk about technology as not being a rate limiting step in all of this. I think, you know, one of the things that we hear repeatedly in the marketplace is, you know, well, when that technology is created, but in fact, your experience was the complete opposite by the sounds of it. You looked at the technology and it exceeded, as you described it. Share a little bit about what that means. What were your sort of experiences with that?
Yeah, so in the very beginning, and our lack of understanding of the technology in the very beginning, in many ways, helped us. In our ways, we were not limited by the technology of the day. Meaning, our imagination and also our need for the capabilities of the technology, it did not limit us. But instead, we say, you know what? This is the end functionality that we want. We had faith that we would be able to figure it out, even though it did not exist at that time. So we set out to find the people, and people are extraordinarily important. We found the best of the best at what they do, and we believed that that was the path to what we wanted. So be able to communicate that vision and not let any current technology limit our vision. That was very big, because we were technologists. We would have realized, well, you know, the marketplace currently doesn't have this, and in order to get there, it would just be too difficult, not possible. We would have stamped it as not possible. Instead, we said, we don't know if it's possible or not, but we believe we can find the right people to make it happen, and we were unwilling to compromise our vision due to the lack of technology at the time. So that helped us tremendously, and that perspective really allowed us to be able to get to where we are today.
So that's fascinating. I like that. So don't know if it's possible or not, but, you know, don't allow a compromise of the vision based on lack of knowledge and applying that. That's I think from a learning standpoint, one of the sort of, as I would describe it, an incremental step in all of this is, you know, bringing the right folks together to be able to deliver against that. So that's great. For those of you that are just joining, I'm Dr. Nick. I'm the Incrementalist. And today I'm delighted to be talking to Paul Coyne, the co-founder and president of Inspiron, and Mike Wang. He's the CEO and founder of Inspiron. We were just talking about some of the history as to how you got here. I think it would be great if you could share a little bit about what it is. What have you created? And I know it's not just the device, but I think, you know, certainly from a technology standpoint, there's some interesting innovations in there. Share a little bit about the details of what's going on and what it is that you've put together.
Absolutely. So our vision was to create a single IoT device. And for those of you who don't know, the IoT stands for Internet of Things, where it is a piece of electronic that essentially serves as the platform to connect all other sensor-based devices. So our vision was to use advanced computer vision sensors to gain insight into the patient environment in ways that had never been possible before. We realized that many of the things that we categorize as adverse events, medication errors, falls, pressure ulcers, and also anything that essentially harms the patient. Majority of these things happen because staff are limited by their staff to patient ratio. They're limited by the patient that's in front of them, meaning we can only see one patient at a time. And when we are not with the other patients, that gives the opportunity for bad things to happen. So our vision was to have a single device with the advanced sensors that essentially serves as a cognitive patient care assistant, where we'll automatically analyze the patient's environment, flag for danger, and allow us to be able to gain insight into the patient's care environment in ways that's never been possible before. Originally, we started with simply being able to generate data on patient attendance, on patient and staff interactions, and now we're beginning to develop much more sophisticated algorithms in being able to categorize the different events that are happening. We call it clinically significant events, whether it's a physical examination, a procedure, a medication, if the patient's in the bed, out of the bed, if the patient's ambulating. All of this is being captured by our computer vision platform, and we developed the software to be able to automatically categorize these types of events. And the goal is to eventually being able to integrate with electronic medical record systems to automatically chart these events in very accurate and timely manner that takes clinicians away from computer screens but put them in where it's more needed, which is the patient's bedside.
So obviously, as a physician, I listened to this, and one of the things that sort of struck me very early on, and I know you've come at this from a slightly different direction where you're essentially triaging the limited clinical resources at the bedside, particularly, you know, the support services, you know, everything from nursing and beyond. But one of the things that stood out to me was the fact that this potentially offers a means of tracking activity at the bedside and potentially documenting it, right?
Absolutely. And right now, this is all done manually. So as you very well know, it's only limited by what the actual staff member input into the EMR. So it's very inaccurate. Many times it's not reflective of what actually happened in reality. Therefore, we want to really improve that. But not only that, but to really allow clinicians to be able to spend more time with patients. As we all know, it is a well-known fact that currently clinicians spend more time with their computers than with actually patients. So it is our effort to be able to bring our clinicians back to the bedside where they're needed.
So it's interesting you say that. So one of the sort of mantras that we learned over the course of time is if it wasn't documented, it didn't happen.
Exactly.
And the reality is that the documentation doesn't always reflect reality, not that there's, lack of good intent, but ultimately, that's, I don't know how to describe the sort of the task of documentation, but it's not a value add task, certainly not from a patient standpoint. I know it is
correct.
Value add from a clinical standpoint because we need to communicate, but ultimately, it's been hijacked for the most part from a billing standpoint,
correct.
And there's some real scope here. So I think some really correct. Exciting potential here to expand this. But one of the other things that is clear about this is that it offered an awful lot more. So help me understand what's going on in this sensor. What does it consist of, and what are you doing with that data that you're starting to gather?
Yep. So essentially, we have built several proprietary sensors that essentially look at the entire 180-degree view of the patient's room. And also, there are sensors looking down at the patient to analyze the body position of the patient, the activities of the patient. So for example, from a very fundamental level and a very basic level, hospitals wanted to know essentially how much time are staff spending with patients? How often are we seeing our patients to make sure that they stay safe? Also, very practical sets of data, such as, how often do our patients use the call bell to require staff assistance, and also how long does it take for staff to attend to these patients and to be able to meet their needs. Right now, that data is completely, it doesn't exist, to be frank. And these are very impactful sets of data that allow staff to be able to work more efficiently and also to benchmark their success to be able to know what are some of the issues that are occurring on the unit. Is it a staffing issue? Is it a teamwork issue? So right now, the data is being used in this very fundamental way, but that is just the very beginning. As I had mentioned, one of the big capabilities of this sensor-based platform is that it captures in real time the body positions of patients. So as you well know, pressure ulcers is a huge problem in this country and across the world. So this technology is also able to detect the patient's body position to be able to tell if a patient who's immobile, if they have stayed in the same position for longer than the allotted period, and will notify clinicians to be able to turn that patient to prevent pressure ulcers. So things like that really is the only thing that sensors and this kind of computer vision platform can accomplish. And also, we have done this completely with the privacy and also with HIPAA in mind in developing this by not using cameras, by not using streaming videos. A lot of hospitals are beginning to put actual video cameras inside patients' rooms and hire somebody to sit there to look at multiple screens. That doesn't exist with our platform. We have no cameras, no such kind of video streaming capabilities, but everything's done on an algorithm basis where our software automatically analyzes the information that we are capturing, and it goes to a mobile app to the clinicians as well as to a dashboard for the management.
You know, it's really interesting. I think, you know, one of the costs of this march of technology is, you know, the explosion of cameras that are showing up in all sorts of places and the unintended consequences of that.
Correct.
I think it's really fascinating that you've taken an approach around, you know, non-camera, but still gathering information that has, you know, incredible utility. And I have to say, I can't wait to see the results of a study we did I'm talking probably 20, 30 years ago now, where we looked at the number of visitors into a room. And we're not talking, you know, patients, relatives or friends, but actual, right, you know, clinical staff. And at that time, it exceeded 130 in a day, which, you know, just blew my mind as a Correct. Sort of activity. And now we've got some real potential to, you know, monitor this on an ongoing basis, you know, for both good and bad. You know, the good is, hey, we're doing too much of this. You know, it's not that that's not all value add, but I think we could be better about this. So I think it's really intriguing, and I think the approach is just fascinating. We're almost out of time. Any closing thoughts about, you know, where this is going in the last minute that we've got?
Yeah, so the technology is expanding rapidly, and the capabilities are expanding rapidly. But we hope that we can use this technology in our story as a call to arms, if you will, for all clinicians to lead the way in technology development, in technological innovation, because who better to do it than us, right? Really, I think we're entering a new age where clinicians are stepping into the spotlight, where we are leading technological innovation and bringing these technologies to our patients in order to improve the clinical outcome. We ask all who are interested to join us and to lead this movement, because the future is bright and the future is full of promises, but it needs the people and the innovators behind it in order to make it happen. And we thank everyone out there, all our clinicians, and everyone who does something every day to help those who cannot help themselves. You're our inspirations, and we will always develop the technology and the solutions to serve you. So thank you all.
Fantastic. So it just remains for me to thank Paul Coyne and Mike Wang for joining me, both of them from Inspiron.
Dr. Nick, thank you so much for your time. We really appreciate it.
Thanks for joining me today. Do you have any better ideas, or have you found a small incremental change that's brought about a big improvement in your world? Let's continue the conversation on our hashtag, The Incrementalist, or share with me at DrNick1 on Twitter. You can find more information about the show on our program page at healthcarenowradio.com. And tune in next time to hear my discussions with leaders and innovators from around the globe who've revolutionized their space by using small incremental improvements to achieve their moonshot. I'm Dr. Nick, the incrementalist, and I'm starting a revolution through evolution.